Cooking can look complicated, especially when you're just starting out or branching out into something new. It always feels like there can be so many variables that go into a good meal. And it might feel like sticking to a recipe is the tried and true safe way to make something taste good. But our next guest says that discovering the secrets of four components of cooking can not only make you a better cook, but also help you gain the confidence to experiment more in the kitchen. Those components? Salt, fat, acid, and heat. Samin Nosrat is a chef and author of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, Mastering the Elements of Good Cooking. She's the host of the Netflix series of the same name. She'll be in Madison this upcoming Wednesday at the Overture Center and joins us now in this week's edition of Food Friday. Samin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you start at an even more basic element than those four elements. You write, anyone can cook anything and make it delicious. That's a pretty inspiring message.
I do believe it. I really think that, you know, we're all born with taste buds and the senses, and we, you know, using them is really the way to become a better cook. And there's so much in the world that sort of sends us these messages that we need all of this complicated stuff or follow complicated recipes. But from everything that I've seen, it really works to just practice and taste.
And you followed such an interesting path into cooking. You started off as a normal non-chef like any of us and kind of found your way into this. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I grew up, my mom is an amazing cook. My family's from Iran. So I grew up eating really delicious home-cooked food, but I didn't really have much interest in cooking. You know, I loved eating. And I do think that's an important prerequisite for anyone who wants to be a cook. But it wasn't until I moved from San Diego, where I grew up, to Berkeley for college and found out about a restaurant called Chez Panisse, that I sort of even had any interest in cooking. And even then, it came much later. My boyfriend and I, when I was in college, saved up for 7 months. We saved $220 to go eat at Chez Panisse, which is really sort of one of the temples of American fine dining. It was started in the 70s by Alice Waters, who is sort of the godmother of local seasonal organic cooking. And at the time, I didn't know anything about any of that. I just knew it was a nice restaurant to go to. And so we went and had this dinner, which was really nice and by all means delicious. And, you know, I grew up eating delicious food, so I appreciated it. But what I really appreciated was how eating in a restaurant could feel so much like eating in someone's home and being so taken care of. And every detail was so carefully thought through. And it was just so charming and inspiring that I wrote a letter asking for a job bussing tables. And when I brought it in, they hired me and asked me if I would start the next day, which now, as a person who's run restaurants, I understand that was just a sign of desperation because I had no qualifications. But I was an English major who, you know, didn't really know what I was going to do after I graduated college. And here I was in this incredible world-class restaurant, walking through this kitchen, watching chefs turn ingredients into the most delicious meals I'd ever had. And they were doing it so beautifully. And it was like a symphony. And I wanted to be part of that. So I begged them to teach me.
Talking to Samin Nosrat, author of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. She's gone from bussing tables to a chef and cooking instructor, author, host of a Netflix show. Samin, let's get into these elements now, the four pillars of your book here. And I'm kind of a negative person, I guess. The more I think about your four-part formulation and I think back to foods that I've made that were okay but not great, it was because I did one of those four things wrong almost all the time. Like, this is a handy diagnostic for what's going wrong in our cooking.
Yeah, I mean, and you can use it while you're cooking to get on the right track. But should we start with salt?
Let's start with salt. And we could spend hours probably just talking about what you wrote about salt in your book. One thing that I loved that you talked about, it isn't always just like too little salt or too much salt, but when you put in the salt.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think in general, most people could benefit from a little more salt in their food. But I don't think that that's always the answer. I think when you add it is really important, because if you think about it, you know, the simplest way to think about it is, say, if you're roasting a chicken and if you sprinkle it with salt right before you put it in the oven, the salt doesn't have the time to travel anywhere. So it all just stays on the skin. so that you get this like delicious, salty, crispy skin. And then you take a bite of the meat and it's bland and dry. And so if you, on the other hand, if you add the salt the day before, you give the salt the time it needs to travel all throughout the bird and really be distributed evenly throughout the meat. And besides seasoning it and making it much more flavorful, it also affects the texture of the meat, and you end up with much more tender meat. And I can always tell now, like I can always tell meat that hasn't been salted in advance just from the first bite.
Does it the same rule always apply? Do we salt at different times for, I don't know, a soup or a fish dish or different things?
Yeah, different things absolutely really need to be salted at different times. Meat in general really benefits from a day's head start. Fish is much more delicate, so really just 5 minutes or 20 minutes is, at the most, is plenty. And then with things like soup and vegetables, you know, I'm big on tossing my vegetables with oil and salt before I roast them in the oven, because same thing, they're just smaller, so the salt doesn't take as long to travel through. But you really want to get that thing salted throughout. A pot of water that you're going to cook vegetables in should be really heavily salted before you put the vegetables in. But for dishes like soups and stews, I salt as I go because the flavor changes over time, and you can absolutely fix a soup at the end, you know, and just get it perfectly seasoned, but it's a lot nicer and a lot less sort of jarring to do it all throughout, because salt also affects the way everything else tastes, the way the spices taste and the way the acid tastes. And so it's kind of like you're fixing everything a little bit at a time. You know, you don't want to just have to do one big change sort of at the end.
I'm kind of a boring guy in my salt game. I use your basic table salt. I got a little kosher, you know, the chunky kosher salt for a little of this and that. What's one creative kind of salt out there that you recommend people try to expand their salt palate?
Yeah, I think, you know, something I really like is flaky salts that are flaky sea salts that have been sort of evaporated over the course of many days. And what happens is they turn into these really delightful and honestly quite extraordinary pyramid shapes. And a couple brands there's Malden salt, which comes from England, and then here domestically there's a really lovely salt called Jacobson sea salt from Oregon. And the purpose of having these like really flaky light pyramids is that when they get, you know, when you they end up on your tongue and you bite down on them, they're so light that they're kind of it's kind of like biting into a teeny tiny potato chip or something. They're crisp and light, and the saltiness explodes on your tongue, and it's this really wonderful burst of saltiness. And so that's probably, if you've ever had like a fancy chocolate chip cookie or brownie that's had salt sprinkled on top, it's probably that stuff that has made its way onto there, and it really does make a difference. It can be expensive. It can be anywhere from like $6 to $10 for a little box of it, but you have to remember it's the stuff you sprinkle, you're just using a little pinch. So for me, a box of that lasts, you know, over a year.
We're talking to Samin Nosrat, chef and author of the book Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, Mastering the Elements of Good Cooking. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Samin about her cooking philosophy, how to use these four elements, the salt, the fat, the acid, the heat? Did you make a discovery that really upped your cooking game in one of those four fields? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation with Samin Nosrat, chef and author of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, Mastering the Elements of Good Cooking. You can join in if you have a question for Samin at 800-642-1234. Do you need some advice on using heat, acid, fat, or salt? Have you taken advice from her book or her Netflix series and used it in your own cooking directly or as inspiration? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Samin, we got an email from Kristen who says, I'm a professional chef and your book and show are highly inspirational for me. I love your positivity. And Kristen writes, I've noticed your efforts to feature women and people of color in your work. Do you have any recommendations for cookbooks or chef's work I may not have heard of?
Oh, sure. I love this question. I really love, there's a young woman writing these days about Indian cooking and all sorts of other cooking named Priya Krishna, who I think is so funny. She writes in The New Yorker and The New York Times and for Bon Appetit. I really love her, and her book is called Indian-ish. There's this other book that I love. I'm struggling to remember the name. Well, one really important person who I do think we as Americans are all responsible to have a relationship to is Edna Lewis, who often gets described with the shorthand description of the Black Julia Child. But in a lot of ways, I think that does a disservice to both Ms. Lewis and Ms. Child, because they were really their own people. And Edna Lewis, in a lot of ways, is the single most important and influential figure in American regional cooking. I mean, she took Southern food and was one of the first people to really dedicate, you know, and get it down on the page. And her writing, she has several books, and she's an incredible figure who I like to do a lot of work to spread the gospel of.
Thanks a lot for that email. We spent some time on salt. I want to touch on at least a couple of the other parts of your quartet there. How about acid? And this is something I've been discovering lately. If I'm cooking something and I feel like it needs something, like 90% of the time, it's some kind of acid. Can you talk about the role of and the kinds of acid we use?
I'm so glad you chose acid to ask about, because I think it's, in some ways, it has the most clinical name of the four. And so a lot of people feel a little bit intimidated by it. And it's not a word that, you know, most home cooks are used to using, because we talk instead about things like lemon juice or vinegar or tomatoes instead. But all acid is anything that's got a tang to it. It's sour. And where salt, you know, the function that salt plays in our cooking is really to enhance flavors. Acid brings contrast and balances flavors. So it's exactly what you said. You know, like I recently was at a friend's house and she was making a chicken pot pie, and she had the filling ready to go. And she was like, it just needs something. And I don't know what, cause it's definitely salty enough. And I tasted and I said, oh, you know, if you just add a spoonful or two of white wine, that'll perk this up and bring it to life. And so we all naturally want that. We have those acidic taste buds, and we all already actually are drawn toward acidic things. You know, it's like when you take a bite of a burrito and it needs something, usually you add salsa or sour cream or cheese. And all of those things are sources of acid, because that's what brings it to life.
A lot of times as I'm cooking, my acids of choice are red wine vinegar or lime or lemon. What's the right way to pair a particular acid with the thing we're cooking? How do we know which is the right one to reach for?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I really try to sort of look back to tradition and geography to let that direct me in my cooking. And so just last night I was making some Cuban black beans. And I was like, this needs a little something. What am I going to do? and I didn't have sort of the regular kind of white vinegar that I thought that would be used in that dish. So instead I used hot sauce. I had some Cuban hot sauce. So I used that. So I try to always think about what's available in the region where I'm inspired by. So if it's, you know, Japanese cooking, I'll use rice vinegar. If I'm cooking food from, you know, Germany, I'll use apple cider vinegar or wine vinegar. In France and Italy, it's always wine vinegars and lemon. They love lemon. But there are parts of the world where citrus doesn't grow. So if there's not citrus there, I would rely more on vinegar and try and use the vinegar that comes from the source that makes sense in that place. And, you know, as a person who travels a lot, my fridge is like mostly devoid of actual staples and filled instead with a lot of condiments and things like pickles and kimchi and fermented things. And so those things from all over the world are what allow me to take a pot of beans or a pot of rice or a simple chicken broth and really sort of tinker with it and get it to taste right from the right part of the world, is having all of those acids and condiments on hand.
And that reminds me of something I loved in your book, and I've got it flipped open now. You've got these flip-out pages with these circle charts where you have regions of the world, and then you break it down by country, and then you've got whatever it is, the fats or the acids, depending on the chart, that go along with it.
Yeah, and you know, it's the whole idea of salt, fat, acid, heat really is that it is such a universal philosophy, and that everywhere I go in the world, I see people cooking this way and using this mnemonic device, whether or not they can articulate it, to guide them through their cooking. And so it was sort of a way for me to prove that by making these maps of the world and saying, like, oh, these are the acids, you know, these are the salts, these are the fats, these are what people use to make their food taste good. And if you want it to, you know, if you're making a stew, the method you use to make the stew is pretty much the same wherever you go. The ingredients just change and the flavorings change.
Talking to Samin Nosrat, chef and author of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. It's this week's edition of Food Friday. Got an email from Janine who says, hey, any suggestions for people who can't have salt or on low sodium diets? This speaks to me. My dad was on a low sodium diet growing up, and that was a challenge for cooking. Any advice, Samin, to help work around that?
Yeah. So, like I said, like we discussed, I think a lot of the time, when you add the salt makes a big difference. So especially for me, even if you're reducing it, doing it earlier makes a big difference. The other beauty is our palates are really malleable. And for example, my mom, when I was growing up, she didn't use a lot of salt. And I didn't have anything to compare that to. So everything tasted really fantastic and totally flavorful. And then once I got used to more salt, I could then sense the blandness. So once you, if you commit to a low salt diet, your palate will adjust to really get used to that. And then you can use all of the incredible sources of acid and certainly the spices of the world. And another thing that's really important for me to make food taste good is fresh herbs. So I really try to use the fresh herb that's appropriate for the place and just use that at the last minute to bring anything to life, even if it's like really old leftovers.
Well, let's spend some time on heat. And this is not like heat as in hot peppers, but this is the thermal part of cooking, heating stuff up. And I think when if you boil a carrot or you oven roast it or cooking in different ways, it's almost like, is this even the same starting food? Can you talk about the miracle of heat and how it transforms what we're cooking?
Yeah, so the beautiful thing about heat, you know, like we discussed, I didn't come from a formal cooking background. And so there's just so much language when it comes to cooking techniques that I had no idea what people were talking about braising versus stewing and roasting and pan roasting. And, you know, the kitchen where I worked, it was a professional kitchen. And sometimes we'd do something on the stove. And if we were out of stove room, they'd say, oh, build a fire and cook it over that. And these kinds of things seemed completely like incomprehensible to me, how to make sense of all of these different forms of heat and how to get the same result. But over time, I saw sort of two important things that I think really made everything a lot more clear. One is that it doesn't really matter what your source of heat is, whether you're cooking something over a campfire or out on a grill or on the stove or in the oven. What's much more relevant and important is what's happening to your food and the rate at which it's happening. So if I'm browning a steak over a hot grill, but it's now wintertime and I can't go outside, and if I want to achieve that same result and get that same crispy exterior, then I want to get my cooking surface really, really hot. So I'll use a cast iron pan and I'll preheat it in the oven until it's like blazing hot, and then I'll put it on the stove over the highest heat and sear my steak so that I'm getting that same thing on the outside. I'm getting that seared crust. That's the important thing, not the source of heat. And the other thing that was really sort of a really helpful tool for me was to realize, again, that all around the world, people sort of rely on two levels of heat. They're not, you know, in the most sort of like rural places or sort of our most historical cooking techniques don't rely on precision. And ovens actually are some of the least precise cooking tools we have, because you might put the dial at 375, but what's happening in the oven is probably not 375 for much longer than 30 seconds. So it's more like, do I want my food to be simmering and cooking slowly and sort of absorbing water and gently becoming tender? Or do I want my food to immediately get brown on the outside and cook very quickly? So I kind of think about it in terms of, am I cooking something tender that I want to keep tender? In which case I would use high heat to sear a piece of fish or a steak. Or do I want to take something that's tough and make it tender? Like, I don't know, braised oxtails. That's something that is tough and needs to grow tender. Or dried beans. Those are things that need to simmer over low heat for a very long period of time. And again, it doesn't matter what the source of heat is. It matters the rate at which you cook it.
Well, we're going to have to leave fat aside for now. We won't in our cooking. But Samin, you're going to be talking in Wisconsin next week. Give us a quick taste of what you'll be talking about.
Well, I really spend a lot of time in these conversations thinking and talking about community and how we can use food to really grow closer to one another and take care of each other and take care of our earth. But I'll be joined in Madison by my friend Abra Behrens, who is a really wonderful chef. And she and I spend a lot of our time thinking and talking about sustainability and the environment and the role of food in that. So I'm sure we'll talk about that too.
Samin, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me.
That's Samin Nosrat, chef and author of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, Mastering the Elements of Good Cooking. She's also the host of the Netflix series of the same name. She joined us for this week's edition of Food Friday. She'll be in Madison this upcoming Wednesday, October 23rd at the Overture Center. We have a link to that event at WPR.org.